President Bush used a campaign swing through South Dakota today to issue another in what have become almost daily warnings to the United Nations. Do the right thing, he said, and force Iraq to disarm now.
If the UN won't act, and if Saddam Hussein won't disarm for the sake of peace, for the sake of a free future for our children, we will lead a coalition of nations and disarm Saddam Hussein.
While rhetoric continues here in the U.S. and at the U.N., life in Iraq goes on. NPR's Ann Garrels is in Baghdad. She sent this report on life in the Iraqi capital.
The streets of Baghdad are packed with honking cars. The government's finished repairing almost all the bridges, government buildings, and utility plants that were damaged by U.S. bombs in the past. And despite the possibility of future bombing, there are few public indications of crisis. There are no signs of soldiers, only the usual contingent of traffic cops. There are no anti-aircraft guns, artillery, or other weapons to be seen, though Western military analysts point out such equipment almost certainly would be concealed until fighting begins. About the only indication life isn't quite as usual is that Saddam's government has issued food rations, on which most people rely, 3 months in advance, and the value of the Iraqi currency has plummeted. Behind the scenes, the combined effect of U.S. threats, U.N. sanctions, and Iraqi government policy is increased corruption. The gap between haves and have-nots has grown. Covert smuggling lines the pockets of the nouveau riche, whose palatial homes sprawl through Baghdad's wealthy neighborhoods. In nearby Babylon, where laborers excavate Iraq's glorious past for a mere $3 a month, a new palace for Saddam Hussein looms in the background. It's forbidden to take a tourist snap of the site if the palace is in the frame, which pretty much eliminates all photography. An archaeologist says he can't speak to a foreign reporter.
He cannot say anything because he needs to permission to do that. So he wants to just be silent.
Clearly ashamed, he later takes the reporter aside to apologize profusely. The economic situation is certainly better than it was just a few years ago, driven by the expansion in the UN Oil for Food program. But many Iraqis fear another war would erode these economic gains, however uneven they are, and punish the people again. They say they hope their government will readmit UN inspectors to avoid a military confrontation with the U.S. But they also ask why the U.S. is pressing for a war now.
Do you think that we are going to hit the Americans? Or to get any aggression against them?
In a smoky Baghdad tea house, patrons toss dice on backgammon boards. Life around them is little more than a gamble. They were scared in 91 when the U.S. bombed Iraq. Now they say they have no plans to leave the city.
At the beginning, when we face the war the first time, we get no panic and not well organized. But after 3 times when the Americans do with us, after that 1993, 95, 98, we get used how to face this kind of activity. So I think our life is getting very normal. We know how to deal with this.
This combination of bravado and resignation is easily found among Baghdad's 5 million residents. Yet some take advantage of rare moments when government minders assigned to journalists are distracted. They convey through furtive glances or knowing looks, they're eager for change. This is extraordinary in a country where the mere hint of dissent has resulted in prison or worse in recent years. Despite the American threat, Americans are warmly welcomed.
Yes, how are you?
How are you?
Good, lucky for me to see you. I am very happy to see you.
But a retired teacher suggests President Bush is just making things worse by threatening to invade. Don't you understand, he says, that U.S. pressure is merely uniting the country and making Saddam more popular among many people? He concludes by shrugging and shaking his head as if to say, don't you get it? At Baghdad University, a 41-year-old man is passionate about learning English. As an officer in the Iraqi army, he spent 10 years at the front, first during the Iran-Iraq war, then in Kuwait. He was captured by the Americans.
I was treated like any POW. They were treated as nice. And
he never married because of the wars. Now, by studying English, he says he's trying to rebuild a shattered life. He dreams of traveling abroad, but he dare not say where.
Don't embarrass me, please. Don't embarrass me, please.
In other words, don't get me in trouble by making me say more than I already have. Banners still proclaim yes, yes, the government slogan in the recent single-candidate presidential referendum that saw Saddam Hussein reelected with a patently absurd 100% of the vote. Many admit they voted out of fear. And despite his much-heralded victory, Saddam appears under pressure to make concessions that would have been unimaginable only a few months ago for the larger purpose of sustaining his power. Take the unprecedented emptying of Iraq's prisons. Privately, Iraqi analysts say this was done to appeal to the population because large numbers of young men had been jailed for draft dodging or desertion. This interview with an Iraqi accountant reveals the surreal nature of conversations here. She can describe how difficult it is to make ends meet, an officially acceptable comment.
I have one child, a daughter, and I work, and I admire my work, and I love it.
How has your life changed in the as a woman in the last, 10 years, 12 years rather?
Two hearts, because...
Only later, though, when the tape recorder was turned off, it was revealed that her husband has spent the past 15 years in prison accused of spying for Germany. He was one of the political prisoners Saddam just released. She pointedly did not praise Saddam Hussein. Saddam has also recently ordered a cancellation of the unpopular $200 fee charged to all Iraqis wishing to be abroad. At 50 times a working man's monthly income, this has effectively stopped most people from leaving Iraq. But with 3 million Iraqis already out of the country, the Iraqi government still forbids the most educated to leave, whatever the price. It's impossible to draw any sweeping conclusion about the overall state of mind of Iraqis from the comments of just a few. And criticism of the regime is mixed with passionate criticism of President Bush, whose name, meaning empty or nothing in the local vernacular, has inspired a rash of jokes. Many who might like Americans fear the U.S. government may well be targeting Iraqi society at large not to promote democracy, but to control Iraq's oil. Many Iraqis say they're doomed every which way they turn. With or without war, they fear the future. Anne Garrels, NPR News, Baghdad.